My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You're listening to Math and Magic, a production of iHeartRadio.
All the major forms of current pop music came out of the South. Country, blues, rock, jazz. What happens here travels well, but it always doesn't get the understanding of the depth of how important it is and the true artistic value of the artist involved.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, and welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Today, we're going to explore some entrepreneurship and specifically about the modern music business and how country has evolved to be the biggest music format. Our guest is the founder, president, and CEO of the Big Machine Label Group and also the founder of Big Machine Distillery. Scott is a Southern California kid of the 60s and 70s. Bicycle, motocross, and skateboarding in empty pools. By the way, he's still a racer. We'll dig into that more later. His dad was in the music business, so he grew up with the big stars of those days stopping by his house. He has been there at the beginning for artists and has signed deals with Tim McGraw, Jewel, Lady A, Zach Brown Band, Thomas Rhett, Florida Georgia Line, and many more. He was also a mentor on American Idol. He is a strategic and flexible thinker who runs a tight ship. He gets things done. It's not just about ideas. It's about execution. Best of all, he's a good guy and a good friend. Scott, welcome.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to do this.
Now, before we jump into the meaty topics, I'd like to do you in 60 seconds. Ready?
Let's rock.
Do you prefer Nashville or LA?
Nashville.
Early riser or night owl?
Both.
Listening to music or playing music?
Now it's listening.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Mountains or beach?
Beach.
Vinyl or streaming?
Streaming.
Cooking or ordering in?
Cooking.
Country or rock?
Depends on the mood. I'm going to say both.
Watching car races or racing cars?
For me, racing.
Okay. It's about to get harder. What was your first job?
Working at a bicycle motocross store building bikes.
Favorite radio station from your youth?
KMET, Tweedledee.
When do you do your best thinking?
It's shutting the door in my office and getting into my own groove.
What was the first record you ever bought?
Stuck in the Middle with You.
What was your first concert?
It would be Kiss at the Fabulous Forum in 1976.
Final one. If you could be anybody else, who would you be?
Mick Jagger.
Okay. Well, let's jump in. Big topic, country music. Why does it not get the attention or respect it deserves? Biggest radio music format, huge artists, sold out tours, in the middle of the culture of this country. But when I look at what the media covers or what marketing references is in their advertising, it doesn't even come close to reflecting that. Why is that?
You know, you really touched on it. It's what the culture of the middle of the country is all about. It's not really very often, if ever, the shiny, sparkly thing. It's something that's consistent. It's telling the stories of blue collar predominantly and, you know, based in Southern culture. We're not on the West Coast. We're not on the East Coast as far as our headquarters. When you match that up to the national buyers of advertising, et cetera, we're not there, unfortunately, in a meaningful way as often as we need to be. And we're a little bit older demographic for a business that's going to go after a younger demographic. We're predominantly not going to be the first one. But it's always great when my friends from both coasts come to visit, hang out a little bit, do some business with us. They're always blown away at how great the Nashville system is. Everything here in Nashville is connected. The Country Music Hall of Fame remains completely relevant, as does the Grand Ole Opry, because it's all centered here. And the younger artists really have a great knowledge and respect for that connective tissue.
You know, it's interesting. The most populated part of the United States is now the South. And I'm not sure people have turned their focus to it. Do you think that this feeling we have about country music is sort of a respect issue, or do you think it's just lack of knowledge?
All the major forms of current pop music came out of the South. Country, blues, rock, jazz. What happens here travels well, but it always doesn't get the understanding of the depth of how important it is and the true artistic value of the artist involved. You know, a lot of people still say this, and I've been hearing this for 40 years. It's like, well, I don't really like country music, but I like that. It's like, well, Morgan Wallen is country music. So it's almost a guilty pleasure. In some places, in some circles, it's just not cool to like country music. I don't know what that stigma is. If you look at some of those Southern inflections and the stereotypical aspect of that, you could point, it's like, well, people think it's cheesy or that it's phony. And that was the entertainment part of it. But, you know, the people who think that haven't gone past the cover of the book to see what an amazing, fluid, and important music this is, not to just North America, but to many parts of the world.
So what's the biggest barrier to elevating country music to its rightful place?
Continued exposures. There's always a star that starts to shine. So that gets to what my job is. Like, okay, what's on the periphery? Who's that one artist or two artists that is going to be so strong that's going to pull the mainstream to them? We've become arguably the best place in the world for young musicians to come and be able to work playing music. That's what Nashville has become. So what does that mean? Well, that means the next one's coming. It's right under our nose.
So let's jump a little bit. In the mid-1980s, you worked for Mary Tyler Moore's record label. Much of the 90s, you were at MCA Records Nashville. You were, by the way, at that point on a mission to make it number one, and you did. MCA was label of the year every year you were there, even label of the decade. And so first question is, how did you do that?
I was playing in rock bands when I moved to Nashville. And so rock's a big part of my DNA. So when I came here and discovered Waylon and Willie, that's what brought me into country. And then once I got into the game and doing promotion at Mary Tyler Moore, I was one of just two promotion people. And we were slaying the major label dragons, just the two of us working with indies. And so I was able to envision how to win this at a very young age. And then I went independent in 1989. And I became the number one independent promotion guy in Nashville pretty quickly. I was part of breaking the Kentucky Headhunters and Dwight Yoakam and Carlene Carter. And then I started looking at, okay, what is my next move? And at that time, my two favorite artist rosters were MCA and Warner Brothers. And so I went to MCA in January of 1991. And it was one of those things walking in, like, okay, I always joke that when you're an indie, you learn how to turn water into wine. So I walk into MCA, I'm like, I don't have to turn water into wine. You guys have wine. Okay, we could go. So walking in, coming from nothing as far as leverage and tools to George Strait and Reba McEntire and Vince Gill and Wynonna Judd, it's like, can I, this toolbox over in the corner, I don't see you guys going over there. Can I use those tools? And like, run like hell. And so what I did is very specifically, Arista was our big competition at that point. And so I was scheduling all the singles. And so I would go, okay, George Strait for Alan Jackson, Vince Gill for Brooks and Dunn. We're going to match them superstar for superstar. Where we're going to win is breaking new artists. So I had a huge focus on breaking Marty Stewart, on breaking David Lee Murphy, on breaking Wynonna Judd as a solo artist, on breaking Trisha Yearwood. I made sure that our front line was throwing smoke at all times and then building up that next bench and that next strength. You couldn't catch us.
You left MCA and then you started DreamWorks Nashville with Randy Travis as your first signing. You were hot right out of the box. Now, the ironic twist is, in 2004, MCA bought DreamWorks and you were back at MCA. And by then, I think they'd gone cold. You brought them back again as the head of promotion and artist development. And what I think is more interesting is you were on fire, but for some reason you had this spark that was the moment that you wanted your own label. Why? What ignited that?
Well, it really started at DreamWorks. At that point, there weren't a lot of new labels in the business. And so at DreamWorks, you know, having the ability, you know, looking at the landscape, looking at the assets that we had, we're a full entertainment company. So I used every weapon that the movie company had with premieres and all that stuff and brought that show business to radio, like one of my heroes, Bob Pittman, does. And so we came out of the box smoking. We took over one of the biggest hotels at the time, the Hermitage Hotel, and rechristened it the DreamWorks Hotel, to the point where we had flags made up and we're flying DreamWorks flags at the hotel. And we had all the PDs and MDs stay with us. We launched like a nuclear bomb. And so James Stroud, who was the president of the label, he was more of a producer than he really was a label head. And what was great about that is he did the things he wanted to do and really didn't love the day-to-day of operations. And so I would take a little bit more of that every day. It's like, James, I got that, man. If you're good with this, you keep doing your thing and I'm going to learn the rest of this. So being at DreamWorks and James Stroud giving me so much rope to learn not only promotion, which we had mastered, but learn the next level of marketing, next level of sales, distribution, publicity, all those things that it's like, okay, I'm going to acquire all these skills and knowledge because at some point, I'm going to grab this by the neck and lead it. And so that leads to January of 2004. They come in and say, we're being purchased by Universal. And MCA and Universal were ice cold. This is April now of 2004. Reba had not had a number one single since I left in 1997. It was painful for me to watch. Not only was she one of my dear friends, but we had achieved incredible success. And something that a lot of major labels still do is they take their superstars for granted. And I'm like, you know what? It's time for us to return Reba to number one. We put together this plan. To this day, it's historic because we had the biggest ever spin increase in the history of the Billboard chart. And that's when it was done by spins. And we jumped from, I think, number six to number one. And we knocked out Tim McGraw, Live Like You Were Dying, which was the biggest song of the 2000s. We turned that place on its head. We had a number one on all three imprints within the first 60 days. And, you know, just breaking Sugarland and Gary Allen, returning Terry Clark to a number one. We had that place just on fire. And I started thinking about, okay, now's my next move. Because I was looking at what everybody was doing. I thought, you know what? I've gotten to a place where I feel I can compete with all of these guys. I don't think any of them are any smarter or any more wise. It's time for me to jump into the driver's seat. And so I started putting together a prospectus, and I started having meetings with investors. And while I was doing it on the QT, I wasn't hiding it because I was in the last year of my deal. And so we get to January of 05. And so I was meeting with the two co-presidents of Universal Nashville, and they're saying, hey, you know, we know you want to run your own label, but we'd like you to stay where you are and give you a bunch more money. And I'm like, I appreciate that, but I'm not going to do that. And so we pretty much defined my exit at that point.
So let's jump to you officially start Big Machine. And just to put it in perspective, again, for people who don't know the music business, you've sold almost 200 million albums worldwide, I think, and you've had over 100 singles at the top of the charts. So let's start with the name, Big Machine. Where did that come from?
So it comes from two places. At that time, I was racing in the NASCAR Weekly Series, and I was a three-time NASCAR Weekly Series champion. And so when the car was really good, we said, hey, man, we got a hot rod. We got a big machine. And then the other thing that kind of tipped the scales was that great song by Velvet Revolver, Big Machine, just this big, powerful rock anthem. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just declare ourselves a big machine, all 13 of us. I always joke that I never told the staff at that point that we weren't a big machine. It's like, we are a big machine, go forth and conquer.
So how did you operate differently from other music companies?
One of the things I think about in that moment in the early 2000s is just the waste, you know, and waste of physical product, of all the junk, and just looking at how the spending wasn't aligned properly. And if you look at the leaders of the business in that moment, they didn't see streaming coming. You know, it was a very polar moment for me, because every week at DreamWorks, we would be on with the entire company. And the Napster conversation came up. So I said, hey, have you guys been on this? This is amazing. They didn't give it a chance to be a flower or a weed. They just said, kill it. Scott, if that's on your computer, you get it off your computer right now and do not put it back on. And I'm like, this genie's out of the bottle, man. And so that was a big, big caution flag to me of just like, okay, they do not see where it's going. And it has officially passed our current leaders by. I can't go down with this ship, because physical distribution was turning into, you know, not a joke, but a joke in certain ways. So it's like, this is the future. We better figure this out.
I was at MTV when someone brought in some CD players from Japan. We had to actually have a power transformer to play them on our electricity to show us what it was. We all got one. And it was interesting. The lawyers at that moment said, we have to kill it, because this master quality recording will be good enough that the pirates can steal everything. And a couple of people said, it is coming. We can't fight it. We should embrace it. It'll be good for us. And as you know, the 90s were the go-go years of the record business, because everybody bought a CD. And, you know, I don't think they had ever had anything quite like that. So the business people won, not the lawyers. And I remember when Napster came, it was sort of the same thing, that no, we can't do this, because basically coming from a legal point of view. And what was interesting was at that moment, the lawyers won, not the business people. And as you know, the music business probably stunted for 5 to 10 years because they missed that moment and had to catch up a little bit.
More of Math and Magic right after this quick break.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today We'll even give you $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Welcome back to Math and Magic. Let's hear more from my conversation with Scott Borchetta.
I want to go back in time a little bit to your youth, just to get some context. You were born in Southern California in the California heyday, 60s and 70s. And you actually got a start in racing at that time, racing BMX bikes, and then went on to quarter midget cars. Describe that time and place for us.
Going back to those Southern California years, we just lived outside. You know, we were on our motocross bikes all the time. And once we got into skateboarding, what would happen is we would hear about a pool in the valley somewhere. And there was this group of us like, okay, let's meet there at 3 o'clock. And, you know, whether it was an abandoned home and we'd clean the pool out and skate in it, or if there was a pool that was empty or that it was dirty, hadn't been swimming and whatever. And so then we'd go back around to the front door, knock on the door, person comes to the door, and we would hustle them, basically said, hey, if you'll let us skate in your pool for a week, we will clean it. So it was always like, okay, where's the next one? It's like finding the next great concrete wave. Just being Southern California kids, you know, you don't realize it when you're doing it, but we were real culture leaders with all that, going from BMX to skateboard culture to the music culture, which we were just surrounded by it. You know, what was happening with punk rock and then what happened when Motley Crue took over LA and going to Guns N' Roses. And so it was always there. And once I got old enough, we were in Hollywood all the time, 3 or 4 nights a week, whether going to the Starwood or the Whiskey or Gazzari's or the Rainbow, Roxy, all those clubs down there. You know, I can go right back there. I mean, I could feel the sunshine on my face.
So you were quoted as saying you had good grades, but were an angry, rebellious kid who was kind of anti-everything. You dropped out of college, by the way, a trait we see often on the entrepreneurs here on Math and Magic. You started playing bass in a new wave bands, country, punk bands. What was the peak of your career as a musician, and why did you stop doing that?
The reason I left LA in 1981 is that I felt like I knew what was going on there, and I just wanted to see what else was going on. And my intent was to come to Nashville for the summer, where my dad had moved in 1979. And so I was here in Nashville for a few weeks. And one of the independent artists that my dad was working needed a bass player. And I'm like, it's country. I don't know. Because they're on tour. I'm like, they're on tour? 19 years old? Game on. So I went and auditioned, got the gig. And Bob, it was so great because I had really never been out of Southern California for very much. And it was seeing the rest of the country. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh my God, it opened the aperture of my existence exponentially. I really didn't know my place yet. I knew I was determined. I knew that I was not going to be poor. I hated growing up in Southern California, not having money. And so I did that for 8 months. I traveled through 38 states in 8 months. And when I came back to Nashville, I'm like, I feel like I'm home. And so I started building, working for my dad during the day. I still was playing in bands, rock bands. You know, we had a couple fun moments where, you know, we had some great record company showcases. We opened up for Cheap Trick and a couple other big artists. We made some of our own independent records, but we never got signed. We never got that next break. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to be a rock star. I see it. I'm friends with it. That's not my strength. And I started allowing myself to follow the energy because I tried to stay out of the record business because my dad was in it and I didn't want to follow in his footsteps and I wanted to be my own man. And when I stopped fighting that is when my record career really just started to take off.
So let's jump to some of your philosophies. Company culture. The first time I visited the Big Machine offices in Nashville, I was probably most struck by what a cohesive and passionate culture there was throughout the building and among everyone I met. How do you build a company culture?
You know, it's a gut feel for me because it's not something for me personally that I can put a list. It's like, okay, you check all these boxes, you're going to fit perfectly. It's the same way with signing artists. I know most of the time within the first 5-10 minutes, is this somebody I want to work with? Is this an artist I want to sign? I like people who are very matter of fact and passionate about what we do. I'm also, I'm not one who's out for credit on any day of any week. I'm truly, it's not a cliche when I say it, I'm a team builder and I am inclusive and I am transparent. And that is really kind of the foundation of the culture because when everybody knows what's going on, when the goals are as clear as can be, and you've got the passion to execute, that's how I built all of my companies.
So let's talk about creative artists. You obviously deal with them day in and day out. It's your job. What's the secret for people who don't deal with them but find themselves there? What advice can you give them?
I always say there's an artist language and you can learn it, but because I was around it from such a young age, you know, it came natural. So it's really talking to them about trying to look at things through their eyes, adding in creative thought, and it's never, ever putting an artist in the corner saying, you have to do this. If you don't do this, then it's never going to happen. It's like, here's the playing field. Here are the options. I'm going to tell you right now, there's not a wrong decision. There's just a better decision. But whatever you decide, it's your name that's on the marquee. I'm here to help you try to make the best decision.
So about 15 years ago, I started Casa Dragones Tequila with my partner, Berto Gonzalez. And the one thing I learned is it's not for the faint of heart. So tell us why you have Big Machine Distillery.
So the idea to have our own Tennessee whiskey started from an activation we did with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in 2010. We had been working with them, wanting to do more. They had been back and forth with Crown Royal, and they didn't get the deal done with Crown. This was for their NASCAR race, the Brickyard 400. And so we got the call. It's like, hey, this title sponsorship is open. What do you got? I said, well, I don't have any money, but what if I bring Rascal Flatts and the band Perry and Brantley Gilbert and Thomas Rhett? Let me bring you a festival in exchange. They're like, you can do that. And we did it. And it blew everybody away. And so that started the relationship. So Crown comes back the next year. So it's the Crown Royal Brickyard 400 powered by Big Machine. And so we start this wonderful relationship with Crown and Diageo. So we're a few years in, marketing medium said, hey, you know what? We're a Tennessee label. I'd love to have a Tennessee whiskey. We became aware of a distillery an hour south of Nashville. The products were fantastic. They didn't know a thing about marketing. And I'm like, wow, a physical product that needs to be marketed. We don't get to market CDs or albums anymore. I got this. We purchased the distillery. And everything that we do, the distillery and the spirits product and the racing, it all leads back to entertainment. It all leads back to an experience. And so in my mind, all of these things are connected. And so what we do with our spirits brands, it also gives me the ability to sponsor the race team. So every dollar that goes to the race team is an expense, marketing expense for the distillery.
I love it. So let's move to racing for just a second. Racing is a huge part of your life. You're actually a serious driver yourself. You have a racing team. What about racing draws you in? And what lessons have you learned from racing, which you apply to other parts of your life?
There's a certain freedom and liberation when you're, it's man and machine, and it's just you and the car. And when you're doing that, and you're on the edge, and you're performing at the highest level, there's no other feeling I've ever had. You know, maybe the biggest artists in the world, when they're playing to 50,000 people and they're all singing, maybe it's that same feeling. And being competitive, everybody wants to win. And it's finding out those ways to win. It's a chess game at, you know, 180 miles an hour.
I rode motorcycles for a lot of years of my life. And I was a pilot for 50 years of planes and helicopters. So I get it. But I know we talk about racing and talk about the great things with racing, but you had a very serious accident. Talk to us a little bit about it and what got you through that.
Yeah, we were at Road Atlanta, and it was March 26th, and we're mid-race. So I start picking up the pace. My pace is as fast as the leader's. We're passing cars. We're moving up. So going into turn one, at over 150 miles an hour, our brake zone, because in road racing, you brake really hard. And so I go to the brakes at the 350-foot mark, no brake, not a soft brake, no brake. The right rear brake caliper had exploded. And so all of a sudden, I am in a heap load of trouble. They estimate that I hit the wall at 109 miles an hour.
Oof.
And I was knocked out for a little bit. It's a longer story, but I call it my evil Knievel list of injuries. You know, I broke both ankles, both tibias, cracked my pelvis in four places, four cracked vertebra, five broken ribs, some internal injury. I ripped my stomach open, and I almost died in the ambulance. You know, everything hurt. One of my meditations is counting backward from 1,000. And so in that moment, I just said, let go, try to get to the next minute and start counting backwards from 1,000. So that was my mantra of just, I was counting and then get to the next minute. And so went into emergency, woke up, my wife was there, several friends, several race friends. So from after everything went absolutely wrong, everything started to go right. We had the best lower extremity doctor in the world. And Bob, here I am 9 months later and I'm 99% healed. I'm so fortunate I don't have a head injury or a spine injury. I'm walking normally. You wouldn't know it. So I've been really fortunate in my recovery. I've always felt like I was very good at being present and living in the moment. And I think that's been underlined and highlighted. You ask yourself, okay, I'm still here. What is the next big thing that I can do? Because I'm still here and I'm energized by it. I'm probably as energized in my life right now as ever coming out of this thing because I'm still here.
Well, there are two through lines that we talk about here is you have one of the most can-do positive outlooks on life of anyone I know. And two, you're lucky. And thank goodness
yes.
that it continued there.
Absolutely.
We always finish each episode of Math and Magic with a shout out to the great biz folks from both skill sets, the analytical, organized, math type person, and the charismatic, creative, promotional, the magic person. Who gets the shout outs for each from you?
So the math is my now COO, Andrew Kautz, who's been with me literally from day one. We're getting ready to touch on 19 years together. He's always been my guy. I'm like, Andrew, I know we can figure this out. And he has, to this day, always found a way. And then the great creative marketing person is John Zarling. And ironically, he was with me from the start of Big Machine as well, because as I was cleaning out my office at Universal, he came into my office and he goes, "Can I come with you?" And even though I didn't physically do it, in my mind, I dropped to my knees and thanked God. It's like, if John will come with me, this is the best gift I could get. And to this day, he and I are the ones who've always brainstormed and challenged each other for the biggest promotions we've ever done, taking over the Statue of Liberty with Florida Georgia Line. You know, he's my big thinker, and he always delivers for me.
Scott, you've had a magical life. You've pushed a lot of boundaries, still pushing them. You've taken a lot of risks, still taking them. And you have created so much. Thanks for sharing those lessons with us.
Here are a few things I picked up from my conversation with Scott. One, follow the energy. Scott has a true passion for the music industry. For a while, following that passion meant touring with rock bands. But eventually he realized his greatest strength wasn't playing guitar, it was how well he knew the business. It's important to know what interests you, but also to figure out where you excel. Let that momentum guide you to success. Two, pull all the levers you have. As an independent promoter, Scott says he had to learn how to turn water into wine. When he joined a major company, he realized not every tool was being used. Leverage every opportunity at your disposal, whether you're selling a product, creating an experience, or marketing talent. When Scott took on responsibilities that didn't interest his business partner, he gained new skills that he later used to start his own company. Three, be competitive. Whether it's on the racetrack or the Billboard charts, Scott doesn't shy away from competition. It energizes him. It's not a bad thing to compare yourself to those around you. It can be essential for gaining a leg up, and you may even realize you have what it takes to lead an innovative new company. I'm Bob Pittman. Thanks for listening.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening to Math and Magic, a production of iHeart Podcasts. The show is hosted by Bob Pittman. Special thanks to Sydney Rosenblum for booking and wrangling our wonderful talent, which is no small feat. Math and Magic's producers are Emily Marinoff and Jessica Kreinchich. It is mixed and mastered by Bahid Frazier. Our executive producers are Nikki Etor and Ali Perry. And of course, a big thanks to Gail, Raul, Eric, Angel, Noel, and everyone who helped bring this show to your ears. Until next time.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Parrot Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.